This episode of The Voiceover Social
is supported by Black Cat Music,
the only UK distributor of Studio Bricks booths.
Get 15% off
with the secret password
VO Social Podcasts.
We've just had a heart-to-heart about school plays.
Yeah.
And the effect that, like, getting or not getting roles in school plays or turning down school plays...
Or getting the part and then having it taken away from you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a story for another podcast. But we will one day tell these stories to you. But we've just dried our tears and switched on the microphone. Yeah. What are we doing, Nick? What are we doing here today?
So today is a bit of a... peek behind the curtain, I suppose, in terms of what voice coaches are thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Because recently I've seen a big increase in people wanting coaching.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably this is a bit of a, you know, hangover from COVID.
Yeah.
Because people are at home, they've maybe a wee bit more time in the evenings or the weekends, and they're thinking, actually, I've got time to do that bit of CPD that mm-hmm. I haven't been able to do before. And not only well have they had that time, but they've all of a sudden had the realization that all they can do is online,
mm-hmm.
which at first might feel restrictive, but actually it means they've got all the coaches in the entire world to choose from.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot. I mean, I find that overwhelming. Mm. I'm a bit of a course junkie, you know me. I'm always doing a course in terms of my voice or mm-hmm. as a coach and a teacher. And I've done, honestly, probably about 10 different courses, even if they're just one days, since COVID began, because I'm like, well, it's available and it's online now. I can do it because it's online. So yeah. like literally yesterday, I started an online Fitzmaurice voice work 8-week program. And yes, today I'm finishing a 10 weeks of vocal techniques with a vocal rehab specialist course today. So as I finish one course, I'm starting another one.
Okay.
But point is, there's so much opportunity out there.
Mm, okay, so in that case, what happens when people get a coach? Once you've decided, because we're assuming that if you're listening to this, you've either had a coach or maybe you're thinking about getting a coach, or like it's certainly like in your head. Mm. So what might happen once people go for it? If they get a great coach, what's going to be the first thing that happens? And like practically speaking, because I think people have the idea that you'll start coaching and you'll, in general, improve your vocal ability. But actually, physically, moment by moment, what is going to happen?
Yeah, so someone will get in touch with me to say they want coaching, and they either will have a little chat beforehand about what they want to work on, and then we'll book them in. And then the first session, a lot of first sessions are about getting to know them a little bit, me listening. It sounds like we're just having chit chats, but I'm not just listening.
You're making brain notes.
I'm Sherlocking the bejesus out of your voice.
Great.
Yeah, I'm going beep 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 beep. I'm checking for tensions, and I'm looking for like vocal qualities, and I'm checking the breath and the body and all that kind of stuff. So the first session is really important for me because it's about getting to know who you are, and then if we've discussed before that session what you'd like to work on, I'll have had a few wee things planned out. If you've just booked in on the website because you want to get a session straight away, we'll use that session to sort of formulate a plan, and I'll pick a few things that I know you'll benefit from in that moment, having listened to you talk, and we'll start on that.
Mm.
So for me, it's a very bespoke process. There's no explicit curriculum that people work through. That's my way. I know some coaches do have that, but for me, it's about responding to exactly what's in front of me every single time. And even from session to session, for people, that changes. So yeah, it's about bespoke.
So do people come for one session, then you give them some exercises to do, and then they just go away and that's it?
Yeah, some people just do come for like one-offs. But in my experience, the best way to actually get results is to like commit.
Yeah.
A little bit, you know, because voice work is one of those things that does sometimes involve rebuilding habitual neural pathways and tension patterns, and it's about confidence in your coach
No, you've got to have confidence in your coach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Coach confidence. note to self, do some articulation work. Yeah. Peter Piper. So yeah, it's about, I can't remember what we were talking about now.
Coats, jackets, coaches.
It's about relationship for me. Yes. I get the best results from people when you get that really nice, when you get a relationship going, and you can have a relationship over an hour, and you can have someone who pops in because they need something super quick to work on, or suddenly their voice is gone and they need a few things to help them, and that is great and really useful. But I get most excited when I know I'm on a journey with somebody and they're committed to that journey and I'm committed to that journey, and we can kind of go on that journey together, take a couple of details, stop for a coffee.
Great.
But at the end, you know, we probably get there.
Yes, lovely. So what is your, or what has been your absolute favourite type of job?
Well, these days, one that gets me out of the house.
Right, yeah. Are there any of those? Are there any of those?
Yeah, I did a big corporate job a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, in Bolton. Yeah,
which was brilliant because their fridge was full of Haribo.
What?
I know.
Who keeps Haribo in the fridge?
No idea.
Was it better to be cold, for it to be cold?
It lasted
Was the fridge
longer?
Switched on?
Yeah.
Cold Haribo.
It just made me laugh because in London, when I do corporate jobs in London, the fridge is full of like vegan treats, you know, all of the different milks, you know, gluten-free this.
And in Bolton,
there
fancy,
was one
fancy.
Fridge full of pop, one fridge full of Haribo, and one fridge full of chocolate bars. And then they had actual boxes of crisps. Just
right.
Like big boxes.
Not in the fridge, though.
Not in the fridge.
That's weird.
Just sat on a chair. It's like, they're like, do you want a snack? I'm like, yeah.
Great.
You absolutely do.
I'm going to try it, though. I'm going to try they say they last longer because they're colder, so you can't really chew them as easily.
It's like a Slimming World trick used to be, freeze a curly whirly.
Freeze a curly whirly. How are you supposed to... You can't eat a curly whirly in normal temperature times.
True.
Wow.
Anyway, I can't remember what we were talking about.
No, favourite types of jobs. Ones with cold, freezing cold.
Ones with free snacks.
Oh, yeah.
Things where someone's had a problem and they've seen a couple of coaches before and they haven't been able to get to the bottom of it, or they've been given some really wishy-washy advice that doesn't help. I really like those really specific pernickety details when I can go, well, I think that might be the ventricular folds. Or sorry, you know what I mean?
Ooh, ventricular folds.
So I love the detail, and I love troubleshooting and the bits where people go, oh my God, like, why did I not know that before?
Yeah. You've done that for me. That's happened before.
That was ventricular folds.
It's amazing. like suddenly everything moves into sharp focus. You fixed it.
You are welcome. I'll have some cold Haribo as a bonus. So I think detail. And also, sometimes this also includes detail because, you know, the accent stuff is detail. But when someone comes to you and they go, I really want to work on this accent over a longer period of time, and they just flip and commit to it, and they get a weekly session and they do the work in between, and they come to you with not just the successes, but also the, I don't understand this bit. Can you tell me again? Or I'm not sure this bit's right. And you go back and forwards and you kind of work together to get to the point where they can do the accent. And it's just lovely because people get really proud of themselves when they get it. A coach's job isn't coaching and teaching is very different. You know, when I've taught in drama schools, a lot of the time some of it's a bit more teachery. You're disseminating the information and guiding them through that way. With coaching, it's much more about teasing people to make the discoveries themselves and making sure they have autonomy over the things that you're teaching them. So I'm not just going, do A because why? Mm. You know, I'm going, how does that feel? Mm. What happens when you do this? Do that for a week, come back to me, tell me how you feel about it, positives and negatives. You know, if it doesn't work for you, we'll find something else. But it's about coaching is not you're never going to have a coach forever, you know. Mm. So it's about making sure the person that you're working with understands what you're trying to get them to do and why, and they have confidence in it to be able to keep doing that themselves the right way so that they don't need you. Basically, a coach is prepping you for not needing a coach.
Yes. I have overheard you working before, and there was a time when I was near you, and you had three sessions back to back online, and I was just like in the background. I was sort of I wasn't listening, but I overheard some of it, and I heard that there are some things that you do find yourself having to say over and over again because there's overlap between different problems. Mm. Actually, about more than a decade ago, I was living in a big pink house bus in New Zealand.
Of course you bloody were.
Of course I was. And we were selling coffee out the side of it. So we had a coffee machine And we opened up the window and we'd go up to the top of a mountain and sell coffee. Like, sometimes it was snowing. And it was great. We didn't make a lot of money, but we just sort of, like, scrabbled on by. And because Rich, my husband, had rebuilt the house bus and turned it into a coffee business, people would always ask him the same thing. It was this beautiful old 1950s house bus. They would ask him the same thing about how he did it, the same thing about the bus itself, how much renovation he had to do on it, what engine it was, what coffee machine we had. Oh god, it was so repetitive. Every day the same questions over and over again. And I used to just hide in the back while Rich dealt with the conversation, and I would just make the coffee because I couldn't bear saying the same thing over and over again. It drove me mad. How do you feel about all that?
I don't drink coffee.
That is not the point of my story.
Yeah. So what's interesting is a lot of people do have the same tension patterns, for example. So tension is one of the things you're often working on with clients when it comes to vocal freedom, because we carry a lot of tension in our bodies for various reasons. So things like jaw tension, tongue tension, pharyngeal tension, that's the throat, that sort of stuff comes up quite a lot. I don't mind doing it over and over again, because again, everybody's response to it is different.
Mm.
So you always have to live in that moment of interaction. And also with that stuff, I get to do it too, so it's really nice for my voice. Then other things like breath, it comes up a lot, and particularly within the voiceover space, because my training is like MA level vocal anatomy, vocal mechanism, like I'm very, very intricately connected to how the breath works, and not just sort of, you know, with very good faith recycling information that's come to me from a singing teacher or from someone else or something I've read on the internet, because I actually know how it works. What I often find in clients with breath who come to me for breath problems is they've got a whole heap of ideas that have been layered on that they should be doing or think they're doing because somebody's told them on Facebook, or because they've worked with a coach who's, you know, said something about the diaphragm but doesn't actually know what they're trying to get them to do. Do you know what I mean? And I get that, because there's loads of stuff out there. People just say stuff that don't really know what it means. So with breath, I find myself saying quite a few things again, over and over again. Things like, well, don't worry about your diaphragm. Your diaphragm's designed to do exactly what it needs to do. You can't control your diaphragm because there's no proprioceptive nerve endings there. So when someone says you need to feel your diaphragm, that's literally not possible because you can't. You know, things like that. So some of those things don't frustrate me, because I know that person needs to know the right piece of information. What frustrates me is that the wrong information gets passed around far too easily.
Mm.
And as a coach, particularly this is voiceover coaching now, as a coach in the voiceover space, I come across that a lot, because, you know, the skills I bring are different. You know, the knowledge I bring to the voiceover coaching space is different.
Yeah.
That's always interesting. What else do I say a lot? Practice.
Yeah.
You have to say, please do the work. Like, there's no point getting coaching if you're not going to do the work. Mm. Just don't do it. Don't do it. I had one hilarious interaction with a client who came and hadn't had coaching for a while. And he was like, okay. And I could see he was like, who is this young buck telling me what to do? I've been doing this for years and years and years and blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, you're here for a reason, you know? Mm. So I was telling him about it, and I knew the problem and I knew what I needed to do. I was like, okay, you're going to have to do this every day, even if it's just for 5 minutes. When you come back next time, we'll layer on the next thing. But this can take a while, blah, blah, blah. Came back the next time and I was like, well, how'd you get on? He was like, yeah, I didn't do it. I was like, well, we're literally just going to have to do all that again then. He's like, oh. And I was like, well, we can't do the next bit until you've done the first bit. And he was like, yeah, but, and started to get, you know, just question things. And I'm like, if you want to question me, good, I encourage that.
Yes,
absolutely. Ask a coach questions. I don't care how, you know, hard you think they might be, whatever, just ask the question. You have to know what they're trying to get you to do. And I was like, why didn't you ask me that the first time?
Mm.
He just didn't trust me. He didn't believe that I knew what I was talking about.
Right.
And then we had to do the whole thing again.
So after that, did he understand? What did you have to change in the way that you explained what was happening to make him understand that he needed to practice?
Here's how that session ended. I said, I get the feeling you're not either not trusting the information I can give you, or that you're not in the right place to receive this information. I'm going to tell you now, there's no point coming back to me if you're not going to commit to this. And he didn't come back.
That's interesting.
But there's no point me saying come back if he's not going to do the work.
Right.
So didn't come back. And that's fine. It's nothing to do with my, you know, I was completely honest with him. You know, mm-hmm. I said, you have to do it. Do you think you're going to do that? And the answer was no.
Right.
So he didn't come back.
Has anything ever shocked you in your career as a coach?
I had... Should I tell the story now? Should I tell that?
You're whispering behind your hand.
Yeah, tell the story now. You can edit that, but
I... No, I don't want to.
Yeah, so I had this one client... And he came into the studio. It was different times back then.
He came
into the studio and we had a little hello, how are you? And I said, and we'd chatted a bit beforehand. And he got in the space and I said, so, you know, what's the problem? How can I help? And he was coming from a corporate background. And he said, it's really hard being a man in the room at the moment.
Right. I've heard that from people.
And I'm not going to lie, at first my eye went, and welcome to our world, you know, like, and he explained a little bit more about what he meant. And I had to sort of put aside my personal feelings or my personal biases, you know, unconscious, subconscious, whatever it is, biases about how I might feel about this, to listen to him and understand where he's coming from and then work with that. Mm. So I think that was a shock for me, and that was one of the first times I had someone in the space who brought something up that was really bringing into the studio something that's very politically polarized and very sensitive at the moment, at that time, and still is.
And something that didn't gel with your worldview.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was... those were his feelings, and that was what he was experiencing, you know, and I have to understand that. And as it transpired, really what we were doing sort of had, in the end, didn't really have much to do with that. Mm. But he needed to get that out because that was the context that brought him to me. So in the end, it was about confidence and presence and vocal freedom and understanding who he is and how he can communicate in an ever-changing kind of corporate environment and corporate climate. And if he wanted to, he could have kept that to himself, but he felt like he needed to, and you know, that's fine.
And in a way, that is good because of all the, I mean, in more than just the way that you said it was good, it was even more good in like a worldwide global thing because everybody is so polarized and everybody's like you and versus me and us versus them and we versus they. And actually, to have somebody who brings that, I've got friends that I adore, that I keep close to me, even though they are the absolute opposite of everything that I believe in politically and religiously and morally, socially.
Yeah.
Not morally, I mean, maybe morally, maybe a little bit more. Like there's that we are absolutely different, but I think that they are as people, loving and caring and charming in some ways, and so I want them to be near to me so that I don't just get stuck in my own way of thinking and forget that real people have real ideas that are genuine to them.
Mm.
And that doesn't necessarily make them bad people. Anyway, it's good, isn't it, to have those perspectives?
Yeah, I think so. So that was a shocking one on that morning in
was
my
that,
studio.
Was that the most challenging job you've ever had, or have you had more challenging?
Some people get coaching because they want to show the coach how much they know.
Wow, right.
So sometimes you get these people and they're like, they feel like they have to validate their own knowledge rather than just receive the knowledge that you're going to trying to give them. Right. So that's an interesting juggle.
Mm.
It happens quite a lot with high profile clients. So sometimes I get to work with people who are very, very well known for professional or, you know, whatever reasons. Often... what you get presented with or how they present is their public persona and how they're perceived in the press through the TV show they're in or the political party they stand for or whatever it happens to be. And it can be very hard to get them to be authentically who they are and feel like they can just let that go so that you can actually get to the root of the problem. So I was working on a play once and there was a very well-known person in it who was being an actor in the play, and he felt like he had to justify every decision he'd made as to why he'd was performing in the way he was. So every time I suggested something, he was like, oh yeah, but I was doing that because of such. But it's because when you're in the public eye, I think he wanted me to be able to go away saying, oh yeah, I worked with him and he's really good and he's really nice, you know, and and I don't care who you are. Like, it doesn't bother me how famous or unfamous, like, you're just a person with a voice that needs my help. And that's what you have to focus on. So those are challenging sometimes when you're talking about, you know, personalities, I think.
Juggling egos.
Yeah, juggling egos. And letting people know that it's okay to fail, you know. And because when you're in the public eye, you're not allowed to fail. And I think that's the problem, was the problem here. He saw me being brought in as a failure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
And he was doing a great job. He just needed to be a bit louder. Yeah. And that's what I was there to do, help him be louder. But the one thing that's going to get in the way of that is tension. And, you know, there was a lot of tension there. And you could, sometimes it's really hard to get past it. Anyway, so, yeah, I don't care who you are. Brad Pitt, I'm waiting. Still waiting. And other challenging... What was the other thing I was going to say? Challenging at the moment, because I want to get my hands on people to feel their shoulders and help them with posture. So it's challenging at the moment online. They just sat up straight.
I don't need any help with my posture. I know everything
my
that I'm doing with my posture.
Fine. Hey, I can't couldn't touch you even if I wanted to.
Have you ever had to? Have you ever had a client show up and you've actually had to turn them down?
Okay, I don't turn people down. But there are certain inquiries that I offer different solutions to. And if they don't want my different solution, then I will allow them to go and find someone else who'll take their money and not be able to help them.
That is very diplomatic. What exactly are you saying?
Okay, I'm not going to help you lose your accent, all right?
Right, right. Yes. What does that mean? What does it mean?
Okay, I have often get inquiries for accent reduction and accent softening. And for English as native English speakers, it's not something I do. English as a second language is a different prospect. But for native English speakers, I don't care what your accent is never the problem. And I have refused many, usually from corporate environments, inquiries that go something like, my boss says I need to lose my Scouse accent or I won't get this promotion. So I don't go away, I'm not going to do that. What I try to do is give them my version of the gospel, which is, okay, how do you feel about your accent? How does your accent make you feel? How do other people react to your accent? You know, we talk a bit about it and I offer other solutions, which for me are much more about understanding of your accent, understanding communication. And it's much more about making that person feel okay with their accent, because then the communication sort of rectifies itself. So I'm not going to help anybody remove their accent.
Right.
So I have let those clients move on. And I know people do that and that's fine. You know, there are people out there who do accent reduction. But my line is, it's really hard learning an accent to an authentic and consistent level for a performance job where you get to put that accent on a character and play somebody else. And it becomes part of that character and that whole being. Imagine trying to change your accent in real life when you're still you. When your accent is a collection of everything that you've experienced to date, like, it's incredibly hard to get to a place where you feel confident and authentic in that new sound. And I just think there are better ways of improving communication if that's the problem. It's never accent.
Yes, right. So try as you might, Nick, you haven't actually physically got the time to coach everyone in
only.
The entire world.
If only.
So given that you're not going to be able to fit everybody in, if people are looking for a coach, it's all very well saying, do your research. But what actually does that mean? Because you can Google people.
Yeah.
Just Google people and see what it says on maybe Google reviews. How do you find out who is going to be a coach that is going to give all the things that you've said and be a genuine help?
Yeah. So there are various, like, pretty casual things you can do, like ask people who've worked with them or like ask for recommendations in Facebook groups and all this kind of stuff. But I honestly think the most powerful thing you can do before you work with a coach is talk to them.
Right.
So I'll talk to anybody before they work with me. It's absolutely fine. Some people like it. Some people want to get booked straight in. Maybe they're in my Facebook group and they feel like they know me a bit already. And that's what the Facebook group is really nice for, actually, is the fact that they can see and get an idea for my personality. But I will talk. I'll happily talk to anybody before they book in. And what that does, it's not about me. Well, it's about me working out if I'm the right coach for you from my angle. Like if you come to me and say, I need to learn how to play football, I'm going to say, right, I'm not the right coach for you. You know what I mean? Or some other thing that's more related to person. But it's about you asking your coach questions. It's about you interviewing them. Like, here's a few questions you can ask. What do you like about working one-to-one with people? What do you find challenging about one-to-one? Tell me about a recent success you've had. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, it's okay to ask coaches questions like that because they should be able to answer. And I think also it's about you asking them about their own training. It makes up a huge part of my kind of values that I'm still in training all the time in some way. And I think as a coach, that's my responsibility to always be working on myself, because not only does it mean I know I'm up to date with techniques and tools and stuff, but it also means I remember what it's like to be a student. Mm. And that is really powerful as a coach, to understand how the person you're coaching might be feeling. Because when I do a course, I still get a bit like, I'll sing that. You know, I still get nervous and I still like have those conflicts of, can I ask that question? Is that okay? So it reminds me what it's like to be in that position. So I think you've got to ask the coach questions. That to me is what I would mean by research.
Right.
What sorts of things do you like coaching? What are you working on today? How long have you been coaching? Do you have any coaching qualifications? You know, what's your background? How did you come here? Blah, blah, blah. Like, it's totally fine, I think, to ask those sorts of questions. And if a coach gets defensive about answering those, that to me is a red flag.
Mm.
So even if it's just 5 minutes, 10 minutes, I think it's okay to talk to people.
Are there any other red flags?
If they promise you something.
Uh-huh.
So if they say at the end of 10 weeks, you'll have a demo, like a brilliant demo. You might do. You might not. Because everybody's different. I don't think there's a curriculum based something that would work from start to finish the same for everybody. Because I've worked with a lot of thousands of voices by this point, you know, because of the drama school stuff. So I think anybody that promises you something is a bit of a red flag, because they have no way of guaranteeing it. I've actually got a wee blog on my website called, what's it called? How to Find the Right Coach for You.
Oh my goodness. Actually didn't know that was what it was called. That basically covers it. Great. If you would like this written down.
Yeah. It's just, you know, again, it's just like my experience, because I'm still in coaching all the time.
Mm.
So I feel like I'm reasonably well placed to, because I'm always looking for good coaches. And I've made a few boobs, you know.
Have you?
Can I say that?
I didn't know that was part of your repertoire.
I've done a few courses with people who are incredible at their craft but cannot coach or teach anybody anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people struggle in rooms where the coach is trying to teach them stuff and the coach doesn't know what to do because they're not a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And that is frustrating. And I get upset and feel let down when I'm coached by somebody, quote unquote, that actually isn't a coach and can't coach. You know, they're just doing it because they're good at the thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, a lot of people are good at both, but many people aren't, and that's the problem at the moment.
Great. Go to the blog.
Go to the blog, yeah.
Yeah, I've been Leah Marks.
And I've been Nick Redman.
And we are the Voiceover Social. Together till the end of the